not happen for an age. Lent.
What's that?
Tis a gathering.
Hello and welcome to Endmoot. It's episode 94 of the podcast, and coming up on this episode...
I'm working on the idea that despite today not being the better player, I am the better man.
Oh, this was always my strategy. Yeah, I'd planned this from the get-go.
While I spin the wheel of excitement. Something like that. Yes, some tremendously exciting things coming up on today's Entmoot. We're delving into the finale of the Slow Grow League that I've been taking part in Lincoln. I realise it's been quite some time since I did an episode on this. It was a few months ago. I think it might have been March. It's been ages and ages since we heard the first part of it. But to remind you, what was happening in said Slow Grow League was I was building an army of fiefdoms. So we've heard me sort of dip my toe into the fiefdoms water over the last few months. And the first half went rather well, I vaguely recall. I think won two out of my three games in the Slow Grow. So we have the final two games coming up today on the podcast, but also we're sort of polishing off a few other things, including the winner. Yes, that's right, we've got a winner of the wonderful competition giveaway of the SBG magazine, which is of course provided by Damien and Tom of SBG magazine and Seven Stones fame. That one will be coming up in a short while. We of course had the riddle in the dark, which sounded something like this. Yeah, that was the riddle in the dark. Who spoke next and who? What do they say? Sorry. We'll find out the answer to that in a short while. We'll also be introducing another question that needs answering in the podcast as well, because we have an intriguing one. It's all about horses. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop, cue the coconuts trotting behind me. So that's all coming up on the podcast, and we'll, of course, talk to a couple of people who I'm playing against in the Slow Grow. And we're dividing it up slightly this time round, because basically, I usually do. We build an army, and then we do some emails, and then we go back to the sort of conversation around the tournament later on. Well, I'm going to divide it up. We're going to do build an army, hear a conversation of a game, then do some emails, and then do another build the army because it's Slow Grow. So we've got two different army lists to delve into. So that's what's coming up on the podcast. So with that in mind, let's build an army. Yes, we're building an army, and it's all about dem fiefdoms. Yes, very exciting, because, of course, we've got a Slow Grow to finish off. Up until this point, I believe, I'm correct in thinking, we got up to 600 points worth of fiefdoms. And, of course, you've heard in this podcast over the last 6 months, we've had adventures at various different points of fiefdoms. I think the last one was around 600 points, and that would have been the Grand Prix, was it? Or maybe we've done one since then. I suppose, well, other than Seven Stones, where it was a partnership with Michael, and that was all mounted. But when I last did it, was 600 points. We had Forlong and Imrahil and Dwyn here. But now, for this episode, and for this game in particular, we're up to 700 points. Ooh! So very exciting. So let's run down the list. Here it is. It starts with, and caveat, in this Slow Grow, we've known who we're going to be facing before we have to submit a list. So everyone, me included, has been tailoring their lists. But of course, the downside is if you tailor for one thing, you've got to keep what you've got in that game for the following game. So you might regret your choices later on in the tournament. But I got to tailor against a list which I knew would be the Rangers of Mirkwood. So lots of shooting coming my way. I didn't know the mission. We had Vito in action, which we'll find out a little bit more about in a second. But I came up with this list, and it goes as such. Begin with Imrahil, mounted with lance. 160 points general. Then 8 Men-at-Arms of Dol Amroth. They're just so good. Defence 5 is the downside, but they can get up to Fight 5, which is the upside. And they have Pikes, which is ace, as long as they're within the Fight Value buff, obviously only within 3 inches of Imrahil. Then we've got Knights of Dol Amroth, 2 of them on foot for 11 points each. Expensive, but high defence is handy, certainly against elves. Shooting elves, anyway. Then we've got a Clansman of Lamadon for 8 points. Then we've got a Mounted Knight of Dol Amroth for 20 points. They are very expensive, but again, Fight 5 with a lance is very handy sometimes, although perhaps not as handy against the elves. I'll probably kill them quite easily. I'll be wounding them on, what, 3s on the charge, which is pretty cool. And the Fight 5 will maybe be handy against them. Forlong on horse is the next option. He's 90 points, comes with his tutor and a lance, well, a war spear, so that's handy. Strength 5, 3 wounds, 1 fate. He's actually been surprisingly resilient, and the horn is very, very good. So Forlong, great addition. Men-at-Arms of Dol Amroth, we've got 6 of them, so 6 pikes, then 2 Clansmen Lamadon with that two-hander sword, which if you roll a 6 in your dual roll, you don't get the minus 1 for, so some valuable killing power from the Clansmen, and also fearlessness. Or sort of very high courage at the very least, so they're handy for sticking around. Then we've got 2 more Knights of Dol Amroth on foot and 1 on horse. The next warband is Dwinhir. So in the previous game, we had added some Black Root Vale archers. I've kept with some, but not a lot. We've got 3 Black Root Vale archers with spear and 3 without, so a total of 6 plus Dwinhir is 7 bows. And of course, I figured here the point would be, I mean, I don't want to add any more against elves because I know I'm going to lose the shooting war. So let's just hold fire. But what I did add, and this was my big coup to add, was a Knight of Dol Amroth on horse and a Captain of Dol Amroth with horse and lance for 85 points. So that Captain of Dol Amroth could potentially be very powerful. Fight 6 within a few inches of the wonderful Imrahil, and that will be very handy. So that's one of the things that we've got going for us. And of course, he's got March, again, helping to close that gap. 32 models, 8 might, 9 bows. 9 bows, is that right? Where's the 9? No, that's not right. Not 9 bows, it's 7 bows. Anyway, so that's the deal. 32 models at 700 points is okay. I've got low model count, which is a bit frustrating, but I think it will work in the end. So without further ado, let's go on an adventure.
I'm already late!
Late for what?
I'm going on an adventure!
We're into game number 4 of the Slow Grow then. So this is a continuation of the last episode. So you've already heard my army list, but you don't know quite who my opponent is yet. And it's also the organiser of the league. Welcome back to the podcast. It's Tim. Tim Elwes, hello.
Hello.
Welcome back. Welcome back. So first of all, you've been organising yet another Slow Grow. Why do you inflict this upon yourself?
It's actually worse than that, because I'm currently running 2 Slow Grows.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. The Lord of the Rings Slow Grow, which is like in Season 5, and also the Old World Slow Grow. No, it's not as good as that. I've kind of fallen into doing it, and it's are we on swearing on mode?
You can be swearing, it's fine. We're all adults here.
It's like a metric fuck ton of disaster. It's like if someone had like liquefied a disaster, et it and shat it out, that would be what the Old World Slow Grower Imps Gaming is this year at the moment.
Is that just because people were excited at the start and then have already waned because it's rubbish? Or is it just that it's hard to organise people? Because I haven't played Old World yet.
No, it was one of those things where everyone was wildly optimistic before Christmas, and yet between Christmas and now, everyone has turned off their Discord notifications so they don't get any messages or private messages to arrange their games. And I have to physically go around to their houses and I like slap them or post carrots through their letterboxes to remind them to play their games. So, yeah, it's been a trial this year. And to be honest, the Lord of the Rings Slow Grow is not going, I think, as well as normal years.
Yeah, I think I was postulating this on the message between before we arranged the game about is the Slow Grow, is it dwindling perhaps because there's not enough sort of excitement in the general kind of community for MESBG? Is it the lack of releases? Is it something else, or is it just a weird set of circumstances here?
Weird, really. We always start them in January, so early in the year. You either get folk who've had a wonderful Christmas time and have loads of fun painting, or they've had an awful Christmas time, their wives have left them, the dog's died and all that sort of stuff, and it's cold and it's miserable, no one wants to come out. But yeah, this is season five. We've had the mass enthusiasm beginning of a slow grow. We've had the lots of locals going, oh, this looks really fun, and getting involved. We've had Rings of Power sort of rebooting it. And this year, it's just kind of the diehards are in. There aren't as many new players. Mm. Folk are getting tempted by other stuff. And in reality, we've all played each other a lot. We've all played these scenarios a lot. Kind of a bit staid, and what can you really do? This year, Slow Grow's tried to be a bit more competitive to make us try a bit harder.
I guess to cater for those people who have been around for a long time.
Kind of. It's all been stripped back to a very simple one-page rules. Bring what you want, fight each other just like a tournament, roll some vetoes and things. And yeah, I've never had as many drops as we've had, and we're only on round four. So
we did start with quite a lot.
No. We started with 26, and last year we started with 33. So we had one drop last year. We missed one game out of 80 or 90 games last year. It was really good. This year, I've had hassle already. And it's fine. I appreciate people have got other things to do, and Toy Soldiers, for some people, doesn't come top on their list of things to do.
Outrageous.
I know, scandalous, isn't it? But at the same time, the folk who are in it now are mostly the folk in our Fellow Bellies team and a few other people. What can
it's,
you do?
It's sort of 15 or something like that, isn't it? 16?
Yeah. Well, I think there'll be 20 by the time I've sorted it out at the end of this round. So it's still a reasonable number. But, you know, there's not that spark this year. It's taken a bit more effort to get people to play games. And I don't know. It doesn't seem.
We need a good release. We need something to jivvy up the community. But I'm going to remain positive. Because I was doing well at the end of the last episode. I did, I think I got two wins and one loss, or is it three wins and one loss? How many games have we done? We're on the fourth.
We just played game four, so you would have been two wins and a loss.
And you were on two wins and a draw. But before we talk about that, we've been discussing this throughout the podcast, the veto system. You've introduced this here in the Slow Grow. What do you think to the veto system, and why have you done it in the way that you've done it, which is the random from the whole lot and then veto one or two?
So like I said, this year's Slow Grow, the premise of every year's Slow Grow has a slightly different premise, whether it's for newer players or for a theme or things. This year's Slow Grow was designed to be very much a competitive thing. It was designed to mirror going to a tournament. So everything has to be painted. There's no little buffs or concessions. It's just bring what you want. And so for that, because we've got five rounds, there's three random scenarios from the whole pool of 18 rolled for all players, and then whoever you're paired with, you veto, just like being in a normal tournament. So that was the aim. It was to make it look and feel like competitive play when you go to a GBHL event.
So do you think veto is a good thing for the game? Do you think it because there's been some postulation that veto might change the sort of armies that people build.
So I have to be careful now because...
This is controversial, potentially.
No, not really. Over the years of doing the Slow Grow and things, I've done a lot of demo games with a lot of new players. Not necessarily because I'm a great player, but I think with the amount of games I play, I'm fairly experienced. I've always told people when they're new and looking at building an army, one, to have some beers and watch the films and pick something they like, but two, when they're sort of list building, to build a list that can do well in, because you don't know what scenario you're going to play. So on one hand, I like the veto system personally because I tend to ignore that advice and take wildly swingy armies. So if I don't want to win the spoon, it at least gives me a chance to even up the score a little bit. I don't really have an overriding opinion. My main opinion on scenarios at the moment is there are only 18, I'm sick to the sight of them. How hard can it be to get another 12 in an official book and flog it all to us for 12 or 15 quid? It's easiest money GW will ever make. Veto system, I can take it or leave it. We all know in advance what it's going to be before we buy the tickets, so I don't really care.
Good point. I think you're right there. The bang on the money is we need more scenarios, and I think maybe that's part of the reason why the game feels a little sort of, especially in a local group where you know, as you said, that you're going to play a lot of the same people again. So with that in mind,
no. There's more scenario.
You've got
rage,
more.
Yeah.
More scenario rage. Right. Go on.
I think really, if you if you look at the amount of scenarios, because you'll know this from a GBHL point of view with people crunching all the data, some scenarios you never ever get to play.
Yeah, like Storm the Camps are one that you don't often see. And
which is terrible, really. So out of the pool...
You hear rumours, sorry to interrupt, you hear rumours that people roll for Storm the Camp in a scenario in a tournament and then quietly re-roll it.
I heard some bell end of a TO was considering doing an event with all the Maelstrom scenarios and Storm the Camp, which would be particularly exciting, I think. But, you know, if you've got a small pool of scenarios that you can play at events, some of them don't get played. It makes the pool even smaller. Add in veto as well. You're just getting to play the same ones again and again and again. And I think part of the... Feels boring. Maybe not at the tables I play on, because there's always some fun with, you know, a Sauron or something really cool or something brilliant and wonderful down at the lower ranking end. But surely for those folk who play hundreds all the time, do they get bored of playing like domination and things every single time they go to an event?
I think personally there's a difference between you and I you and I and people who do well on the top tables at GBHL 100 events in it, and they have a slightly different mindset. That they want to finesse their army to the absolute point where it's perfect for winning all the scenarios and balancing out, and that's fine. That's a joy that they can have. I think I'm with you, I quite like the spice of life. So and in fact I've already said before, I think, about the fiefdoms, that I'm not 100% sure it's the sort of most exciting scenario. Army, because there's not a lot of exciting jazzy stuff in it. It's just kind of grinds and it does its thing and you either lose or you win, and it there's no fun tricks to pull. But with that in mind, let's talk about your army, because you do have tricks to pull and there's some interesting stuff. So what have you been bringing for the slow grade?
I've brought the Rangers of Mirkwood because I've been playing it all year. I've tried really hard this year to pick one army my usual way, lowest ranking faction on Longshanks that I don't already own. Pick it, play a load of games with it, try and, you know, enjoy it before I then go into something else, which will be a new project, which will be in July.
Yeah. So you've got the Rangers of Mirkwood. So we're on 700 now. So I don't know where the sort of natural fit for Rangers of Mirkwood is. It's probably around 600, 700. Do you think?
Yeah, 400.
I was thinking more, because once you've got Tauriel, Legolas, and two full warbands, that must be about 600. I thought that would be probably quite a good spot.
No.
No.
It's best at the really dinky ones where you can take Legolas and Tauriel and some toys. But even then, it's not particularly good. There's a reason why it's not doesn't rank very well, because it likes to stand in one place and do a little bit of shooting. And when most of your scenarios are get to another place and do some fighting, it's like naturally against it. And it's got no banner either. Who would take it? It's madness. It's ridiculous.
It is. But the way you take it, how many Sentinels have you got?
Nine
Sentinels. A Captain, Legolas, Tauriel, 9 Sentinels. The rest
and
just normal.
15 Rangers. So it's similar to what I took to Belfast. And similar to what we played before we went to Belfast. So, yeah. I think it's ace. It's a really fun army. It's got a lot of agency, and it's fairly good at fighting and things, and I quite like it.
I think the Sentinels are the absolute winner here, because they're certainly the higher the points go. Adding extra bows doesn't really help you in many of the scenarios and stuff, but Sentinels being able to pull people away, set up the combat, set up the heroics and things like that are absolutely ace.
Yeah, well, I only had like 1.5 turns of shooting, and to be honest, the first one wasn't particularly exciting either.
So. First down, I think you got a horse. But we'll talk about our veto, so we haven't talked about the scenario. So I won the veto. We had a choice of domination, seize the prize, and destroy the supplies. I believe you vetoed domination. Was there a reason for that?
No, I can't really remember.
I think it's. I think you said something because I start 24 on.
Perhaps it could have been. I liked the idea of the seize the prize, because having previously played it and forgot it ended when both armies got to 25% rather than just one, I thought I would use this to remind myself of that. And also, I was fully expecting you to go and dig up the prize, and then I'd shoot you with bows and you'd die, and I'd go ha ha ha, and I'd pick up the prize.
Funny that. So you veto domination. I veto destroy the supplies. Ended up with seize the prize. Marched my guys onto the middle. One of the guys lost the horse, which was I thought was convenient because then I didn't have to dismount anyone anyway. And then I whacked into the objective, picked up the objective, first turn. Job's good and shielded him off, protected him as well as I could, but it wasn't enough. You pretty quickly pulled the guy into heroic combat range and then launched a massive group of Fight 6 heroes. I think it was all three of your heroes, essentially. No, it's just Tariel and the captain first, wasn't it? But Sentinels and all sorts.
I think I'll just have to... You'll have to edit this to put this back at the beginning of the front, because the preamble to this game has been like a spicy week and a half of fairly vicious smack talk about how I was going to badly do bad things to you and how you were going to do bad things to me. I forgot that you didn't have an actual banner for the... This scenario is usually bad for me because I don't have a banner. And I was like, ha-ha, I'll come in two VPs down and I'll still win. It'll all be jolly hockey sticks. And, yeah, so the beginning went really well. I thought it was going really well for probably 75% to 80% of the game. And I think the fact that it didn't go well for 100% of the game has probably given away... The ending.
That's true. But I think early on, you got some great stuff. You definitely played it really well early on. You got you shot some stuff. You killed some not a lot of great value, but it was fine because I'd marched 15 inches over the objective with my knights and Imrahil, and Forlong was sort of waiting in the wings, but he wasn't. Neither my captain or Forlong were in a particularly good spot a couple of turns in. But crucially, Imrahil was pretty much defending the objective. And one of the knights of Dol'Amroth had picked up the objective, but then promptly died to shooting in the second turn, which was annoying. And you'd heroic combated Tariel, managed to pick up the objective after a couple of... I think you won that early, the first roll off for heroic move you won, which got Tariel the objective. And then from there, it was just, can I prize it from her grip?
Yeah, I sentineled one of your people forward quite early on. You'd sort of left everything out of charge range, but I moved a model forward, ganked it with a lot of people and just slung myself at the prize, because you get the prize, you win the game, don't you, in this game. So I had to get the prize, and I got the prize, and there's a small wall right in the middle of the battlefield which has got in the way to make sort of two choke points around the prize to get there. And I got the prize, and I was... In fact, I broke you really quickly and had plenty of models, and I sat back and lit my pipe and put my slippers on. And then just got into this ridiculous roadblock where either I couldn't win priority or couldn't win a roll-off, or when I did win priority roll-off, couldn't then win a fight. And it just went to absolute dog toffee.
I think you're right. You killed a lot of my dudes, and then I thought it was kind of curtains. But there was just a couple of turns where I just got wins in sort of places where you probably would have bet on the Sentinel against the one fight five dude, and it just sort of, and it slowly started churning. I was like, oh, okay, so that guy survived that fight and killed the Sentinel, brilliant. That guy's all that, and so it just started tipping. And then the crucial thing was once it had tipped to that sort of point where you didn't have as many bodies, I could start putting one-on-ones, and then you didn't get any of your extra dice for the things, and quite a few of the two attack sentinels had died as well, so it started leaning towards me. There was one thing that one turn where I think that you might have made a mistake, that was a key mistake. We can debate it in a second. I called a heroic move with Dwyn here in a sort of a relatively sort of about 60% 70% through the game, and you didn't counter it. And that was a chance where I could push a lot of guys forward into the centre to start pairing off fights, and crucially get a trap on Tariel and surround Tariel in the middle to make sure that I had enough bodies to block her from being able to escape backwards and also go forwards. They're all defence four crap archers, but nonetheless, it managed to do it. But you had a chance to call a move with either Tariel or Legolas in that turn, but you chose not to call a move. I know it's a while ago now. Was there a sort of threat? Can you remember the moment? And was it as important as I think it was?
No, I don't think it was the most important moment of the game. I had less might than you. I was very conscious that I had less might, and at the same, and I knew from experience that Legolas with his two dice, if he didn't keep that point of might, was very definitely going in the bin. And so my thought for keeping the might on him was that I needed that might to keep him alive and keep me those two VPs. So,
and also the fight six in the centre, which was key to stop Imre Hill and so on, protect Tamil.
We know from experience that Dwin here is shit. And he is. He is. He was shit in this, and that was pretty much all he did in the entire game.
Before one heroic move. Yeah.
Before he ran away.
He did. I didn't shoot one bow because obviously I'm never going to beat the 30 thingies. He got sentineled away one turn and ran behind a pillar for a turn, so he was out of the action for two turns. And then when he did, he called one move. I think it was a really important move, but then a couple of turns later, he'd run away and his might was gone anyway. So.
Maybe the key moments for me when it went wrong for me was Tauriel had a heroic combat against something that wasn't particularly difficult to kill, didn't kill it, and I chose not to might it to get the kill. I think it was going to cost me my two might to do it. But that would have got me a fair way out of the hole, which, you know, I kept the might thinking that I'd be able to use the might to get out of the hole later on, but actually that was a chance to get out of the hole and I didn't take it.
That's an easy one in retrospect though. Like, it's at the time, spending 2 points of might to get a heroic combat off on might not have even killed him, and it was on a five, so you needed to get fives. But I think it would have helped you move certainly further away from A, Imre Hill, B, the Knight of Dalamroth, captain, who was fight six. So that would have helped. I still think I'd have been able to tag her up, but they certainly wouldn't have had the killing power on Tauriel that I eventually managed to bring to bear.
Now, the clutch one was the me reminding you that you hadn't moved those spearmen, which allowed you to use them to block me, to stop me being able to pair off the combat.
So your sporting behaviour did cost you this game. It's true, though. I mean, you did, because if it wasn't for that, I would have been able to block. I wouldn't have been able to block four long off. It would have been four long against some dude and the Imre Hill on Tauriel instead of four long and Tauriel.
So obviously, this game has not borne out the fact that I am the better player, which I think we know that I am.
I mean, you have generally won the games against me in a sort of one-on-one competitive type game.
I was very, very angry at the end of this that I didn't win.
You almost threw the toys out of the pram, I think.
Because this was mine to lose. And I do think the fiefdoms are a fucking awful army. They just look really pretty. I think they're pretty junky, really. But I'm working on the idea that despite today not being the better player, I am the better man.
Well, I think we can leave it on that. Either way, Tim.
Do you want to tell them about the VPs?
It was a 7-2 win to me in the end. So I got the 5 for managing to kill Tauriel in the penultimate turn and give it to Forlong, and then Forlong ran onto the other side of the board. And then Legolas and Imre Hill had a final duke off right at the end. I didn't manage to wound Leggy. Oh, that's wrong then. So I didn't wound your leader. It was 6-2. 6-2 because Imre Hill took a wound, lost all his fate, but only one wound off. And we were both broken. In fact, I think there was only like 5 or 6 models on either side by the end. So, but we both quartered as well. So it did end the game. And that was that. So 6-2 to me. I was
very spicy. So you just have to hope that is a big enough win to get you into the very exciting grand final table extravaganza.
We're all very excited to find out. We'll see, because there's a small chance that somebody else overtakes me. I was the best person up until this point with 2 wins and a loss. Tim was on 2 wins and a draw, so I've now beaten him. But we'll see. See what happens going on to game number 4 of the slow grow. Game number 5 of the slow grow. We'll edit that one out. I won't. I never do. Wonderful. A victory against regular contributor and podcast favourite Tim Elwes there. And he definitely wasn't salty about it. He absolutely was. Oh, did he get salty? By gum, did he get salty. But Tim, you know I love you. But it was salty listening back to that. Anyway, so that was the first bit of said exciting Slow Grow League. We will return to the final game of the league in a bit, but first let's do this.
I'm precious.
Precious.
Yes, that's right. Riddles in the Dark. This is the game where I play a clip from The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit movies, and you just tell me who speaks next and what they say. And this one was, of course, to win an SBG magazine. A very exciting, a brilliant issue of the SBG magazine, kindly provided by Damien and Tom from that organ, as some people call them, from that article. It's great. Great magazine. And it was delightful to see not just a picture of my face in it and a sort of gag about my honeymoon. See the picture for more. But also loads of Ents. Bloody love it. Ent moot. It's here, and it's visually there with some really, really cool models on offer. So they've got the whole Attack on Isengard as a battle report. It's ace, and one of you will be the lucky winner of said issue. So we'll find out who the winner is in a bit. But first, let's run through the emails to see who got the correct answers and who did not get the correct answers, because I have delved into the bag and found that a few of you have indeed got the wrong answer. So just a reminder of the clip here. This is what you have to contend with. Who speaks next and what do they say? So there's your context. Who is speaking next? Now, let's look at this. We've got... We've got Sam Whitlock. He says the next person to speak is Gothmog. And he says, quiet. Big fan of the podcast, he says. Aren't we all, he says. Cheers, Sam. And of course, that is incorrect. Ho-ho! That was what I was hoping people would say. And by God, have you fallen for it, chaps and ladies. So there we go. That's the first one. But thanks very much, Sam, for getting in touch. Tom McConnell's the next person to get in touch. He says, I love the pod. It always is a highlight when the new one comes out. It oozes the joy we all feel when we engage in the hobby. And Tom McConnell then appropriately gets the correct answer. Well done to Tom McConnell. Next, we've got... I've got a whole string. There we go. New Riddle in the Dark, he says. This is Jesse Patton. It's the scene from... No, it's the scene from Return of the King, he says. Orcs are crossing into the west side of Osgiliath, and the next character is Gothmog. It is incorrect. Glad to have this section back. Always fun to guess. Yes, I'll keep it in the back pocket for not regular, not every single week, but every so often it will come back. So don't you worry. But Jesse, you're not in the draw, sadly, because you lose. You didn't get it right. Chuck Sadler's been in touch. He says he gets the correct answer. He also adds about the competitive gaming conversation we were having. I think this is a sort of hangover from last week or last issue, last podcast. He said basically on competitive gaming, as I mentioned before, here in Michigan, we're an emerging community and don't have the developed events the GBHL has. We're trying to strike the right balance between competition and fun as we go along. We're having a doubles event based around the Two Blue Wizards this month in our community, and we also have a hobby award that affects every event and plays into what kind of lists people build. Competitions can be very fun, and I'm a gamer who enjoys good competition, but competition's sake will hurt the community, especially in the long run, as relationships are burned and growth is limited to only the most hardcore, sweaty of the bunch. Thanks for the great podcast. This idea, I'm going to push back slightly on this idea of competition for competition's sake can ruin the community, because ultimately the Great British Hobbit League has been built on competition. Yes, it's also a way for hobbyists to get together to show off their painting and to play the game. At its core, the most regular players are the competitive players. I think that would probably be fair to say, certainly at the higher level, and that's okay. But I don't necessarily think competition is a bad thing. I mean, playing a game, it's fun. If you lose, it's fine, whatever. But competition, it makes for a fun experience sometimes, doesn't it? I mean, you wouldn't play football if you didn't keep track of the score. You know, we're currently in the World Cup, the Euros at the moment. It's very exciting seeing England win and to see other teams be bowled over by our sporting brilliance. And competition for competition's sake. Not convinced by that one, Chuck. But hey, look, this is why we have people getting in touch. It's interesting to hear everyone's perspectives. James Fotherby has been in touch as well. He's pleased the Riddles in the Dark segment is back because he's missed it. But he's not sure about this one. He says the riddle usually ties in with the theme of the episode, in this case, Aragorn or the SBG magazine. But this clip reminds me a lot of this scene where Gothmog lays siege to Osgiliath by boat. Could the next line be Gothmog? I'm afraid, James, you're right in the sense that this clip leans into the topic of the of the episode, and you're right in the sense that it's not that Gothmog clip. Interesting. Chris Cooper's also been in touch saying, is it Gothmog saying quiet? And Chris and Ruth Cooper, stalwarts of Tis a Gathering, by the way, both of you. It was a pleasure to have you along for my themey tournament. Just actually flagging up, this week, tickets go on sale for my Lord of the Imps tournament, which is the slightly more competitive-edged one. But I'll remind people, as I always do, that it's not all about the competition. We've got a big painting competition. We have a lot of social stuff on offer as well. And the general way the tournament is built creates fun list-building opportunities, and it makes it a really, really interesting tournament. Your leader dies. It's replaced by a lieutenant. It's going to be lower points this year, so it's going to be much harder for you to choose those two big heroes, because on day two your lieutenant has to fight Contest of Champions. It should be a lot of fun, so I hope to see a lot of you there, and there's been a lot of great feedback about Tis a Gathering, which of course, as I mentioned, Chris and Ruth had been to, and I'm going to try and incorporate as much of the positive feedback from that into Lord of the Imps to make for a great tournament. So the tickets on sale on Wednesday the somethingth of July, the 10th, I think, something like that. So hopefully you hear this before then, and grab yourself a ticket. Anyway, let's move on to Alex Will. Alex Will says the answer to the riddle is Gothmog, and he says quiet. It is, of course, not that. Unlucky, Alex. Also, I'm going to a casual 700-point tournament in July, he says. What do you think of my list? And here it is. It's the Blackgate Troll Chieftain leader from the Blackgate Opens Legendary Legion. There's a Mordor Troll with a War Drum accompanying him. There's another Mordor Troll Chieftain. Then another Mordor Troll Chieftain with a weapon swap hammer. And then another Mordor Troll Chieftain with a weapon swap hammer. Five models, all of which are trolls. That sounds like a lot of fun. I remember playing a tournament when I started my sort of Hobbit League career, as it were, and I got absolutely hammered by a troll army. And I think since then I probably would have worked out how to beat it. But I got absolutely rinsed, and you'll have some really fun games. You'll lose plenty of games because of objectives and things like that. But actually, Mordor Troll Chieftains, they've all got strike, they're pretty hard to kill, and there's a lot of targets for magic. So, Alex, I think you might have some luck there. Who knows? Who knows? Let me know how it goes. I'm really keen to know. But crucially, Alex, you didn't get the answer to the riddle. So thanks for getting into it, though. Really appreciate it. Next, we've got Francis Cowper, who he does get the riddle correct, so I'll put you in the draw. Francis Cowper in the traditional manner on pen and paper. And he says, and he says a lot of stuff that might give the answer away before I finish this segment. Cheers for making the podcast. I'm a new listener and it all sounds very fun. I should be popping along to events at some point. Please do. Honestly, it's brilliant. You'll meet loads of cool people and see lots of cool models, and it's ace. Number four entry on the list. So we've got three people who've got the correct answer so far. This will be the fourth. It's Jack Darlington. He says he starts it with boo-ra-rum and ends with loving the podcast as always. Got it on while the goblin sleeps upstairs and I crack on with some commission work. Jack doesn't have a home in a fantasy world. I'm pretty sure he's referring to his daughter, unless there's something else going on in his house and there are some goblins invading his home. But Jack Darlington, you are in the draw for an SBG magazine. Congratulations, you got the answer right as well. Dan Woods says morning from the States. And he does this. I love this. He says, first for the riddle in the dark, splash, splash, splash from an orc not understanding the concept of stealth. Then says, Gothmog, grew it quiet. Orc finally understands the concept of self. And all that to say the answer is Gothmog. And all that, and you're wrong. Second, on the topic of competitive play, I don't normally get to play in a lot of events, only usually at Adepticon every year, but I don't feel like I've ever had any issues with competitive players making me feel like I'm having a negative experience. This isn't to discount any people that feel like they have had those experiences, but I feel like as long as you're keeping yourself upbeat and stay focused on playing the game the way that you want to, within the rules, of course, then let those players play their way. Don't let the uber competitive players ruin your day. Dan, I really appreciate that. That's a different perspective from what we've had a lot of. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. I think I'm exactly on your wavelength. I just sometimes, if I know I'm going to play a really competitive player, I just embrace it and have fun and try and have fun anyway. Then Jeremy Hildebrand gets in touch and he just simply says the answer to the riddle in the dark. You're in the list. Thanks, Jeremy. Much appreciated. Sawyer Smith has been in touch as well. He is Sawyer Christian. Sorry, no, Sawyer Christian. I assume Sawyer Smith's your email address, and it's probably your second name or something. Anyway, you're from the US of A and have been listening to the podcast for the last year. Discovered it a few months ago and have been catching up on all the episodes. I thought I'd give a shot to Riddle in the Dark. I believe it's the scene in The Return of the King with all the orcs rowing over the attack the other side of Osgiliath. Huzzah! Another person falls into the trap. He says, congratulations on the little one. My son turned a year old last month, and my wife and I are very blessed. I pray the same for you and your wife. Thank you so much, Sawyer. Appreciate it. But sadly, you're not in the list for the thingamajiggity bob. Well, there you go. Who's this now? Alex has been in touch. Alex gets in touch and says, my name's Alex, and I love listening to your podcast. I hope one day I can play you in a game and be a lucky person to be interviewed. And he provides the correct Riddles in the Dark answer. Correct. Well done, Alex. Well done, well done, well done. And then discusses a little bit about competitiveness. Says, I consider myself a competitive player, but not a league topper. My proudest moment is managing to win a GBHL 90 with my Men of the West Army. Oh my God, you're that, Alex. How exciting. Thanks very much for getting in touch, Alex. In fact, I'm going to respond to this email. I want to talk to you on the podcast because everyone says Men of the West is rubbish. So maybe we will combine Men of the West discussion with my plan for a tournament soon, where I'm also taking a not very competitive Legendary Legion to a competitive tournament. I want to get some tips. So, Alex, I'll be in touch. I hope you're up for it. Anyway, he says, I don't necessarily think the scene's got more competitive than before. I've been going to tournaments for about 4 years, just 4 years though. But the change of the GBHL structures meant the top dogs mostly stayed to GBHL 100s and other people have been put off them, which can be a shame sometimes, as I remember having my arse handed to me as a good learning moment. In terms of bad games, I'd like to say that many of the more experienced players can be very relaxed to play, even as they beat me 12-0. But that almost all of my negative play experience are from newer players who are essentially trying too hard and calling out every move you make out of what I believe is perhaps nervousness. Hope you keep making great content and congratulations on the Baba. Alex, honestly, you're a ledge. I agree with everything you've said there. I think you're right that people are being put off the GBHL 100s because there's a higher percentage of competitive players going to them now than perhaps there was before when there was a bit more competition for those tickets. Because in the past, there were the 90s or the 80s in the 100s, and the 80s were often sort of quirky little events, which is fine. Some obviously there were exceptions to the rule. But now, and then the 100s were the other events. So everyone wanted to go to those big events, and not just competitive players. Now, people can go to 90s, they can go to 80s, they can go to 100s, and I guess if you're not that experienced at the game or you just want to try something out, then maybe going to a GBHL 100 is a little bit intimidating. I don't think you should be intimidated. I really don't. And I agree with everything that Alex has said. Maybe there's something that the league can look at in the future. Thank you so much, Alex. And you're on the list because you got it. You got the answer as well. So that's six people so far. And I think that is it because Mitchell Hammond from the Durant Show has been in touch and he talks about competitiveness. And I'll summarise his thoughts briefly. He says, all in all, I love competitive tournaments, but I think there's a responsibility to ensure your opponents want to return to the tournament fray. Thanks again for your content. I'm looking forward to the next episode. He does talk a lot at length about that in advance. And he talks about how he's a competitive player, but says he doesn't enjoy winning by 12-0 by pulling multiple gotcha moments. He sort of talks and agrees with me when I said something last time about having different gears in which to play your games. You know, one, if you're playing against someone who's clearly new, you're not going to just hammer them with your army and not tell them anything about the rules or give them any tips. You're going to help them along, but still get that 12-0 potentially because, you know, you want that to win the tournament. That's fine. And then there's a middle rank where perhaps you're playing against someone who knows the rules and is a familiar to the system, but perhaps isn't a competitive player. So, you know, you might not be really, really hammering or really sort of playing it hard. And you may be having a bit more of a laugh about it and having a bit more fun. And then there's another level, a top level, where if you're playing against a really hardcore player who's going to play as hard as they can, you're going to play as hard as you can, and you both use every trick at your disposal to try and win the game. And I think those three things are relevant to everything, so you should all take that into account when you're playing a Middle-earth strategy battle game, or indeed any other gaming system. And Mitchell, you don't answer the Riddle in the Dark, which is a shame because you could have been added to the list. So that is that. So to all those people, those six people who got it correct, the answer was, of course, Treebeard. You plonkers who didn't say that. What are you thinking? Of course it was Treebeard. It was an Entmoot episode, and this was the sound and what it led into. You fools. Of course it was Treebeard. That means, therefore, we have a random selection of people. We've got Tom, Chuck Sadler, Francis Coper, Jack Darlington, Jeremy Hildebrand and Alex Richardson in the random number generator, which I will make sound really exciting by inserting a comedic sound right here while I spin the wheel of excitement. Something like that. It is number one, which was Tom. Well done to you, Tom. I will be in touch. Do listen into the podcast, and hopefully you'll get the answer. And I will send you an email within a few days if you haven't got in touch with me. But it's always nice to hear your name read out live on the podcast. So well done on the issue of SBG Magazine. Christmas. But now we've got some of these
questions that need answering.
Yeah, questions that need answering. So we're starting a new topic. So this one comes from the SoundCloud comments, and it's from a commenter called I Follow Keegan, and I'm not sure whether it's a person who's a big fan of Walking Dead or something, or maybe you're called Keegan. I don't know, but you can comment on SoundCloud if you so wish, because I do get notifications about them, so feel free to comment. And this is someone who's commented on one of the old episodes, so you must be working your way through the archives. It's Top Table Tips. I can't remember how long ago it was, a good few years ago at least. They say, always take horses on your heroes. I would completely disagree. I am one of the best players in Texas, considering of my events, my worst finish is a ninth, then a fifth, then every other finish was a podium. I beg to argue that foot heroes are infinitely better than horse heroes, considering all the disadvantages of horses. The only exception is strength 4 heroes with no modifiers, such as Glorfindel, or heroes that don't kill without them. But any hero with modifiers or strength 5, always, always, always run them on foot, especially if they have a way of getting might back, such as Blood and Glory, or Master of Battle, or Mighty Hero. Free actions. Aragorn, Azog, Bold, Dwalind, etc. I'm currently running the Men of the West as my main second appearance of the Men of the West in this podcast. Madness. As my main army, and I've only lost 2 games after 21 so far. Just to say, that is quite the statement that horses are required. I can't remember who said this in the podcast, but there you go. Saying this, most players would agree with that assessment, and all players have their playstyles, but I just adore foot heroes so much. Love the podcast. Huge fan. From I Follow Keegan. So, I mean, we've got to clarify this. I Follow Keegan goes really hard into criticising the idea of horses, but there are a lot of caveats here, including, you know, any hero that, the only exception are strength 4 heroes with no modifiers such as Glorfindel. So that's like most of the heroes, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. So he seems to be implying, or they seem to be implying, you should put all of your heroes on horses if they're strength 4 and don't have any special modifiers, okay? So that's... Is that right? I mean, but you seem to say, oh, I'd completely disagree, they say. I don't know. I just find this really interesting because I don't see any downside to having a horse, except perhaps when you're fighting an army where they can shoot in combat and you lose the horse in combat. But there are ways around that, aren't there? You can dismount before you get into combat, say with corsairs or something like that. I just don't get it. I mean, for example, my captain of of Dalamroth. Okay, granted he gets a lance, so that's a big bonus, and it's a modifier. But he'd be much better on a horse than without. Rohan captains, much better on a horse than on foot, right? What do you think on this? Let me know. I'm really interested in... am I just taking it for granted that everyone assumes that horses are brilliant? And I know there has been talk about putting heroes on foot with pikes behind them can be more advantageous. For example, that Knight of Dol Amroth could be fight 6 on foot with 2 pikes behind him. That's 4 dice against people. Is that a good thing? I don't know. Let me know what you think. EntmootPodcast@gmail.com. EntmootPodcast@gmail.com. Now, it's time to go back to building armies.
Ask Oriok. Build me a army worthy of Mordor.
We left it with Tim, a victory against him, which meant I was in with a chance to not just podium, but to win the whole Slowgrow League. it required a bit of jiggery pokery and some poor performances from the rest of the players, including Aaron Atkinson, who beat me earlier on in the slow grow journey. But up against Pete Chamberlain, who I knew had been running pure Army of the Dead. So just the King of the Dead and hordes of dudes. And he spoke to me in advance of the game saying, oh, what do you think I should do? Should I add Aragorn? Should I just go with more Army of the Dead? And I was like, well, I wouldn't want to suggest. I mean, you could throw in lots of extra Army of the Dead and it might be really good against me. Or you could put Aragorn in and it might be brilliant because you've got lots of might and someone who can actually kill people. So I was intrigued as to what he was going to go for. I had a feeling that he was going to just add Aragorn and then lots more dead dudes. Because he, with a bit of tweakage, obviously it's quite flexible in the old slow grow because you can't just add Aragorn for 100 points. But I assumed he was going to do that and you know, that would be fine. But then what happened? It's not something that I was expecting. Anyway, before we get into that, I had a feeling, as I say, that he was going to take lots more Army of the Dead. So this was the army I took at 800 points, and it goes something a little bit like this. It's Imrahil mounted, featuring a lance. He's the leader. Men-at-Arms of Dol Amroth times 8. They're the ones with the pike. Knights of Dol Amroth, 2 on foot for 11 points each. Then we've got a clansman, a Lamadon. We've got a mounted knight of Dol Amroth on the horse with the pike, with the lance. Awesome stuff. Forlong comes next, leading a warband of, on his horse as well, leading a warband of 6 men-at-arms of Dol Amroth. 2 clansmen of Lamadon, 2 foot knights of Dol Amroth, and 1 mounted knight of Dol Amroth. Then we've got Black Root Vale archers, led by Dwyn here, with his heroic shoot capability. You reroll the wounds if you call a heroic shoot, and you reroll ones within 3 inches of him if you haven't moved. And I gave the rest of the Black Root Vale archers that I had earlier spears, so we've got just 6 guys with spear now. Then we've got the captain of Dol Amroth with horse and lance that I introduced for the march against Tim, with his mounted knight of Dol Amroth as well. Staying in, I've just left that warband as it is, because why not? And then we finish things off by adding a pretty round, I think it was 97 points worth of stuff, plus those 3 spears, is Angbor and Clansman of Lamadon times 4. So in total, we had 39 models at 800 points, which seems pretty good for the sort of the usual kind of ballpark figure of one model per 20 points. I like that. I've got 8 points of might. We've got 9 bows. No, we haven't got 9 bows. I don't know why. I said that earlier, didn't I? I must have just miscalculated. So I've got 7 bows. And we break at 16 models. And we've got a lot of fearless dudes. So we've got Angbor, who provides fearless and banner capabilities for the Clansman. And also, we just got a big horn as well. So I thought, we've got a lot of choppiness, we've got a lot of high courage and fearless. Could this be really good against the Army of the Dead? And then, of course, I saw Pete put down some models on the table. Let's find out what happened.
So it's the final round of the slow grow here at Imps Gaming. It's very exciting. This has been a build-up. Then we're basically playing for the podium spot, or one of the podium spots, because we're pretty sure we know who's won the league, which is a sad thing that is not us. But this game is the sort of third-place playoff, and playing against Pete Chamberlain, a fellow Belly. Welcome along to the podcast.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it's exciting. So, yeah, we've been... I don't think we've played loads and loads over the years, but we've sort of been around at the same tournaments, head along to the same events, all that sort of stuff.
Last year we've had quite a few games.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm in an awkward spot where I'm waiting for you to try and beat me again. And it's put me on edge now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So up until this point, we've been building up. We're now onto the 800 points, as I mentioned. I've got Imrahil, I've got a combination of Forlong and Angbor and a captain and Dwyn. I've got all the people, 39 models, and up against Pete with, what have you got for your 800 points? What have you been building, I suppose, for the slow group?
I've been building the Army of the Dead Legion. Up until recently, it's just been the King of the Dead and the Warriors of the Dead. But for today, I've brought Aragorn along for the Legion, and I've brought Legolas as well. And it was 24 models, was it, I brought? 28 models, yeah. Which is not too bad. A bit less than what I've been doing with just the King, but the extra might, the extra heroes has been... It's made a difference in this game.
It's absolutely essential. I mean, the Legolas shot thing is it chips away at stuff, but also just having, although it's concentrated on one model, having so much kind of late game potential.
Yeah, unlimited. Yeah,
it's veto. So we've talked about veto on the podcast quite a lot, and in the choices were retrieval, hold ground, and what's that? Storm the camp. Thank you. I was scribbled one of them out. So. I think you got to choose your veto first. What did you veto on one?
Yes, I got rid of Storm the Camp first, just because going corner to corner, I thought, well, your heroes are mounted, mine aren't. You're going to get to the corner quicker. Mm. If I leave anything there, it's dead. And by the time I get to your side, then it's a case of, you know, whose army loses first. Mm. I didn't want to risk that compared to the other two.
I think it also is more likely to end in a draw, I think, as well, usually. Yeah. Just the way that they often end up playing out is one gets in one camp and one gets in the other, or neither camp. And then we break each other in Wounded Leader, and it's a six-all rubbish game. So you vetoed Storm the Camp, and I decided in the end to veto Retrieval. And, I mean, part of me was thinking that... I don't know, maybe I was worried about your cavalry doing the sort of the slipping around the sides, and I thought, hold ground, if I could capture enough stuff, or like sort of hem you, fence you off, my superior fight value would just outgrind you, which I guess is a strange thing to say about a Defence 8 army, but I thought if I could get to the middle corner, because there was it's quite terrain heavy in the middle, there's a bit of tree, there's a rock in the centre, 6-inch bubble, and then there's like another building, and there's some more fences, so there was quite a lot of gaps that I thought, if I can get there, I can march my guys into said gaps and just close it off to the enemy. But it all kind of fell apart basically when Imrahil rolled a 2 on his first turn and had to spend a might to bump it down to not be sort of at the whim of Pete, and I think you were absolutely fine with your choices, weren't you?
Yeah, I was quite happy with my choices. I would have probably liked Legolas a bit more central to the army, but I was quite safe that he was near enough to Aragorn that if you brought Imrahil on near him, he'd survive. He could run away to a degree.
But he's unusually he's on his own in your army. It's a single drop.
Yeah, so Aragorn and the King's Warbands were almost full of warriors and riders, and then Legolas was just a single drop on his own, so he could sort of, you know, Ranger of the North style, hide, shoot, and just be a bit of a nuisance to where you deploy.
Of all the heroes, he's probably one of the ones that you want to be separate anyway, because he's sort of happy to just, as you say, move 3 inches, snipe something, move 3 inches, snipe something, move 3 inches, snipe something, and then
that's
he arrived.
Exactly
what he did. And then he, and at the end game, he's like a fight six hero with 2 attacks, so he doesn't want to be churning through stuff ever at the start because of the low defence. He often struggles, doesn't he? But in the late game, he's very handy.
Yeah, that defence, because I didn't pay for the armour, because I'd rather have the extra spears in the army, that obviously was his undoing when eventually he stopped shooting. But I think at some point you do need to throw him into the combat, because I mean, at the end of it, he was in the middle, so he was contributing to the overall win.
Absolutely, yeah. And the I guess the struggle here for me was, I mean, essentially I had a really good, what I thought was going to be a really good lined up charge in the very very first turn. I had the Captain Forlong, Imrahil and 2 knights charging the front line of dudes where I think there was nothing that was particularly scary. I didn't charge anything scary because they're ghosts, but no, there was nothing that was particularly going to worry me in terms of killing, so I hadn't charged any of your heroes, and I called heroic combat with Imrahil, heroic combat at Forlong, and my plan was to call heroic combat with the Captain, but he had I can't remember how this happened. How did he lose it? He spent
I shot him with Legolas with his 2 up. I did the wound to him, and then I think as he was coming in, he did it again.
Yes,
so
that's
you'd lost loads of resources.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, so you sniped him twice, and the second time I had to spend 2 points of fate just to save the...
2 points of might,
save the fate to keep him on the board, which meant he couldn't hurt combat. So I had this plan to have this pretty, what I thought would be devastating lance-based charge. I'd lined it up really well. You know, you couldn't charge me and I could charge you. It did the charge. And then it all didn't really happen the way I was hoping.
I think he lost his fight as well, didn't he? So he stalled out completely, that left you with 2 parts of the 3, and then there was the issue with the Forlong as well.
So he had the 3 attacks which he squiffed despite the banner. Forlong, I did win the fight and I killed some stuff, but then I'd basically chosen the heroic combat badly, because the way that it was angled was that he could only really charge Aragorn and something, and I was like, I'm not charging Forlong into Aragorn and something first turn, because I know what that sort of... I mean, I thought he probably would survive, but you might lose his horse or anything like that. So I thought, oh, okay, I've just wasted my fault. And then Imrahil fails his combat and has to spend a might to win the fight. And then I decided I wanted to charge the King of the Dead because you hadn't struck. And so I was like, right, here's the chance. I can punch a hole into... into the King of the Dead, maybe take him off in one go, because he's only got two wounds to be fate, and I'm looking at fives to wound him on eight dice.
It's a lot of dice. It could happen in one turn. It has happened in one turn before.
And I was thinking that that could be a really massive deal with, although we've got a fearless bubble, I just thought the harbinger is really big deal for you being able to wound me easier.
I mean, regardless of your courage or abilities, it always comes into effect that it makes it easier for me to wound you. So as soon as, like, I was trying to get rid of your horn, because then I would go from like fives to fours, fours to threes. So it makes a big difference me having the king.
Yeah, and I think I only got one wound against the king, and he just fated it.
Yes.
So that was a big... So it was a real disaster that first turn. And then I think the following couple of turns, you won the priorities on the bounce, so I didn't get any more cavalry charge, and they kind of wilted my cavalry.
If I didn't win the priority, I was spending my 3 point of might to call the move.
It wasn't a priority, it was a roll-off. What I mean is you won both heroic move-offs after that. So my cavalry had gone, which was my lances. Obviously, they're so important, having the four dice looking for fives to kill the defence eight stuff. And I think from there, although I did a lot of stuff that I think gave me the chance, it was always going to be an uphill struggle, because I was running out of stuff that could do the real serious damage, especially when Forlong had gone down, which takes away my rerollable ones.
Yeah, because your knights were at the forefront of that charge, and the infantry was lagging behind a little bit. It gave me a good like couple of turns to trap them, pin them down, get rid of them, and then it turned into like the growing fest.
Yeah, and it's your sort of, because at this point the it was all a bit higgledy-piggledy, like nothing was quite right, because of the maelstrom, things were arriving at different times, and so it all just didn't quite work out in the way I'd wanted. I didn't ever get that sort of line of stuff, which was backed up by pikes with the banner, that I thought I needed to do to get the win, and because it all sort of arrived in a bit of a, I don't know, a bit of a sort of piecemeal attempt.
Yeah, well, I think most of your pikes were with the prince as he came on the other side. Mm. So I had a couple of cavalry on the other side. So as everything clashed, I could not trap so much, but I could take things off.
You're right. You were played absolutely perfectly, because I didn't have any kind of terrain blocking my flank. So you just sent a couple of, because you got what, four riders, is it? Three riders. You sent one or two of the riders to just take the two pikes off the side. That meant that guy at the front was on his own against stuff, and then he died, and then the guys at the back died. It just all started, I think basically none of the strategies I had in my head at the start actually were possible, or just because of the way it all sort of lined up.
Oh, this was always my strategy. I'd planned this from the get-go.
But that, I mean, to be fair, you did play it absolutely right. Like, there was, everything you did was right. You went for Forlong with Aragorn, which is a relatively easy kill over a couple of turns. I mean, it took a couple of turns, but you did get it, and you took away the horn, which again reduces my defence essentially, because you're fighting against my courage. So and then everything else was absolutely bang on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go for that first, because I say the horn negates my bonus of the minus one. So with him gone, you go to your original courage, then down as well. So it makes a huge difference to how the whole army wounds you. Especially with anything like the knights that are defence six.
Because they're actually, what, they courage four? So the knights are courage four. So I'm wanting that. They're four up to four, or back up to four with the horn, then down to three, which is big, because you're wounding them on fours, which is so huge.
Which, compared to you wounding me on, was it sixes?
Yeah.
Or six by fours.
It was 6x4s or 5x3s with a charge, but I didn't get that charge very often, so it wasn't really helping very much. But I think what I did really do well was I got onto the objective and sort of pushed over the line and held that line as long as I possibly could. And for a good few turns, I was definitely in charge of the objective. Yeah. Right up to the sort of... Basically, I broke, and I think I'd lost Forlong, so I was worried about breaking, but I had Angbor, who was absolutely essential in this. I mean, I knew it was going to help against the spooky boys, but...
He kept you in this for a fair long time.
For a long time, because it just meant that I didn't have to be doing courage checks. It didn't mean I was blocking, so I could actually get... I wasn't blocking gaps with sort of failed terror check dudes and all this sort of stuff. So it meant that I could hold that line, but again, I think... Inevitably, the move-offs go swing backwards and forwards. Early on, I didn't think I had them. And then there was a couple of turns where it really went well, so I pushed over, and then I started losing them again, as they do, they flip-flop. But the thing was, I'd broken. I had the objective, and I think that you maybe had one or two guys on the map, so something like 10 or so to me.
At that point, like Imrahil's warband was still there holding most of my guys back, so I sort of looked at it, and I was like, as you were getting closer to breaking, I was like, well, I haven't got enough in the middle, so because you had took the like a quarter of the thing between the two not objectives, terrain pieces.
I did that. It was like a pie slice of the objective that we were basically fighting over, because there was no way you were going to send anything really far around, and the couple of guys that did died, including Legolas trapped against a trio of I think it was Dwinhir and a
a Blackroot Vale and a guy with a big, big long sword. So those sort of things, I think I did that really well. But I think just because I'd lost so much stuff early on and the game just carried on too many turns.
Yeah, I think because once you got to that point, like say, without any might points, it left Aragorn able to control everything by just calling unlimited moves. Yeah. If I won the move, then I could call a combat without fear of anything else.
And considering that, the heroes were in such dire straits. I mean, Imrahil has got one fate and one wound remaining because he was your king was quite unlucky trying to kill him.
Yeah.
He was very unlucky a couple of turns when I did lose against him. And then Aragorn's got one wound remaining, no fate. And then so it was so close after a couple of these combats. But then I think you're just squeaked through with Aragorn into that final sort of end phase of the game. And if you didn't have Aragorn, I win this game. I think I absolutely would have had this because it would have come down to priorities. And then I could have locked you off and at least had half the choices. But once Angbor had died, I'd run out of might, and that was that.
Yeah, I think if Imrahil was getting his moves, getting his charges, he would have killed everything that he touched. So being able to pin him in place, negate it, because I think he probably... He only won like somewhere in the middle because the king won quite a lot of fights and then just failed to wound him for at least three or four turns.
And because you had the might, you were taking that, you taking the charge bonus, you were taking the extra dice, you were taking the start. So he started losing combats later on. But yeah, you never chose to kill the horse, which I thought was strange though.
Yeah, I think because he got down to that point where it was the one wound, one fate. It's like, well, if I can do the one wound, there's a chance he just goes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, well, it's worth going for it. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. The banner's gone. Yeah. I think there's such a benefit of him dying. Like basically Aragorn for me.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
Aragorn died, my army would crumble. Yeah, and it, you yeah, would crumble right. If Imrahil went.
It was a really big swing if either of those had died. But sadly, that didn't happen. Aragorn survived until the end game. And I think so we played two. So I definitely would have won on the first turn of Broken, and I would have won the second turn of Broken.
Then
I think after that, it was definitely going to your side. And because you had the might, there was no coming back after that. Unless by some freak coincidence, like over the next six turns, Imrahil manages to kill the one guy you send into him to pair him off over the course of the game. But I mean, that would be beyond the realms of sort of chance.
I was kind of planning for that to happen because it has happened before. But yeah, just I think it was like the third turn, all of my guys failed to kill everything, so it stalled out. And then from the third turn onwards of that, I was killing things. Yeah. I was getting rid of your guys on the objective, and it swung it in my favour.
And you could just choose to... I mean, you never chose to let me just run away, which I would have done. I'd have just charged a couple of stuff and just had the these crappy Courage 1 archers run away. But still, it didn't matter because you had enough. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys on the mat. We've got a little mat to designate the middle. Within the 6 inches of the objectives, and I have just the two guys left. But I do have two guys off the map, but they just never got a chance to move in, including Imrahil was off the map.
Yeah, there was a nice little bit next to Imrahil where there was a pair fighting, I think, for like half the game.
Yeah.
But always going around the other side, so if you lost, you were being pushed away from it. So it was keeping that off, and like I say, pinning Imrahil down was the big thing.
So it was a 9-2 loss to me in the end. So very sad news for the slow growth for me. I mean, I'm very happy with how the army performed. I think I just made some poor choices at certain times and lost some key roll-offs and key combats in that very, very first phase, which I don't think I did it wrong to charge all of my... I mean, it seems on paper, charge your lances into the guys and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, when you did that at the beginning, I did think, oh, it's going to go downhill from here because you could kill six models, heroic combat, kill another six models.
Yeah.
The army then breaks very quickly because you've killed quite a lot of them. So I think I was quite lucky in that initial charge that your dice rolls weren't fantastic and I could sort of come back from it.
Yeah, I think if I hadn't done the four long was just stupid because if he had been able to do it because he'd killed two guys off the... I was very confident with him. He won the combat, killed two guys, and then heroic combat. And it was like, oh, shit. What do I do here? I could charge Aragorn, which is stupid, or I just stand there, which was so annoying. And then Imrahil squiffing his dice was really annoying because I just thought, oh, I've got to... If I can kill the King of Dead in one go, it gives me such a big chance over the course of the game. But, hey, it's a dice game, and it was a rotten couple of turns, and I did... then think later on that I was going to have the win eventually because I had so many dudes on the objective, but it just didn't last exactly when I wanted it.
There were those two turns where if you rolled the one or a two, the game would have ended, you would have won, and it went on for what, four, five, six?
Oh, yeah, a little longer. It was ages after that, but it didn't really matter because I think every time after the second turn, it was yours. So it's just Aragorn. Aragorn is good. And he could have died, I suppose. He could have got unlucky in one of those things, and I just roll a five off one dice, but such is life.
I think his actual three might points I whiffed and they were no use whatsoever.
I think you did spend them too early. Yeah.
But all his free might was crucial and was used spot on. So half and half, not too bad.
Absolutely true. Well, Pete, congratulations. I think it depends if someone else has a bigger margin of victory than you. But I think with a plus seven margin of victory on this one, I think it holds you in very good stead to hop onto the podium for the Imps logo.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. Nice little bronze trophy. I'll take that.
Absolutely. Well done. And I'm glad to see you using your Army of the Dead. We should say they're very, very nice Army of the Dead. The painting is absolutely gorgeous. The highlights are fantastic, particularly on the King of the Dead, who I'm looking at now. And he just looks really cool. You've got this kind of fluorescent look and some skulls on the base as well, which just adds to it. And then, of course, a little sneaky Aragorn and Leggy to add to it. Well, thanks very much for the game. And thanks for talking to me on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
So that's the slow grow. Well done to Aaron Atkinson, who beat me earlier in the slow grow. He ended up going on to win. As it happened, even if I had beaten Pete, which obviously I didn't, as you've just heard, I wouldn't have made it to the top, because I think Aaron drew his final game, but he went unbeaten in the league. So congratulations to him and his Helm Hammer Hand list. Well done to Aaron. Also a big support of the podcast, and I believe won some prizes from the latest patron prize draw. We gave him some objective things. You know, I've seen these doing the rounds quite a lot, so I got hold of some. They're like these mats. They're a bit like mats, and you put them on the table, and they're very flat, and they have little objective markers that you can, so for scenarios like hold ground or domination, you put them on the thing, and then as long as your model is touching or on that mat, then you know it's within 3 inches of the centre bit, which is really cool. So he won some of those in a patron prize draw, and we've also given away a magazine, an SBG magazine as well. I can't remember who got that. Oh, was it Chris Miller? I can't remember, because the original winner was Will Champion, and he graciously decided to pass it back because he already got one. So I can't remember who. I'm pretty sure it's Chris Miller who got it in the US, I believe. Those, if you're a patron, you get entered into irregular prize draws, but you also get sent Entmoot dice, which are exclusive to patrons only, and Entmoot measuring devices, which is all very, very exciting. So if you want to join the old patron crew, do head into that. We also have some, again, irregular live streams and other sort of behind-the-scenes content. But coming up very soon on the podcast, we're going to Ireland again. Yeah! We're going to Belfast, which is very exciting. So I'm looking forward to that, to enter a GBHL 100 competitive event, as I mentioned earlier. But I'm not going to take the fiefdoms again. I like the fiefdoms, and actually I've done quite well with them generally. But I think it's time to rest them. I had a great time finishing off the fiefdoms with 7 stones in this episode here as well. But they're resting now. That's them done for a while. They might come back eventually. But I've decided to basically just scour the web for mentions of the worst legendary legions possible. And I've started assembling it. Find out what I take to Nerneith Arnio Nodiadadad. I'll try that again. They will go to Ireland in the next episode for the GBH Hell 100. And I'll prove to you, you don't need to be competitive to have fun at an event. Thanks for listening. Boo-ra-rum.